But, you know, when you're in Prague and you're in film school and you're just like, oh, America ripped this movie off. And I was so in love with the idea of Kolya. And it was I think it had better execution. It just wasn't as funny. You know, it was much more heartwarming. It had more range. You know, like he was more of a ladies man than Adam Sandler was.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello there, Ted. It is episode 129, and I guess you're on vacation somewhere. You're in the universe.
I am in the universe, yes. I think when this comes out, I will be hopefully in Maine, and we'll be up there. But yeah, now we carved out our typical Friday night to hang out and talk about trailers and see what you've been doing for the week.
Yeah. Now, why Maine? Is there somebody you know? Do you know people in Maine, or is it just?
Yeah, we have great friends that are from New York, and they used to live in L.A. and the kids have known each other since they were like, 3 months, 6 months old, something like that. And just great friends.
Well, they were in the same room with each other. I don't know if they knew each other.
Well, then the parents knew each other.
No, I know.
Very much.
I was like, when people say, I knew this guy when I was born, you know, or whatever, right? It's like, no, you didn't.
So, yeah. So the big news is that I drove cross country. So
yeah, that's what you were saying. But really quick, so you're saying your friends are from New York, they moved to LA, then from LA they moved to Maine?
No, they moved back to New York. But they you know, found a place in Maine, so they're doing a little vacation, so we're just tagging along, spending a couple weeks there.
Oh, wow, a couple weeks, nice. So you drove cross country, so
yes.
Do tell.
It was quite the adventure, I guess, for Ann and I and the kids to drive cross country.
Adventure. Okay, so before you get into adventure, we need to drink and drive, but we'll definitely drink and you could talk about driving.
There you go. Perfect.
So you're on the East Coast. I want to hear what kind of beers you get on the East Coast.
Yeah. So, you know, Maryland in COVID time is kind of hard to go beer shopping.
Really?
You know, all the Maryland liquor stores have to be like, they're very regulated, and beer and wine doesn't matter. It's not like how,
like outside of COVID, they're like state run, like Pennsylvania and Oregon.
Yeah. Or a little Utah. Bit like that. Exactly.
Remind me never to move to Maryland.
So I didn't want to go all the way down to DC. So I went and I got this. Luckily I found something that was, Flying Dog is a brewery in Frederick, Maryland.
Okay.
So a bit north of here, but it's called The Truth Imperial IPA.
Oh, nice. You got some local.
Yeah. I got to keep it local, but
oh yeah,
back
for sure.
To the, went back to the IPAs just to have some comfort, you know, feel like a West Coaster here.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you? What you got?
Tonight, we have from Eagle Brewery in the UK. And if I had my glasses, I'd be able to see where. It looks like Marstone Place Eagle Brewery. I don't know. It's a banana bread beer.
Ooh.
ABV is 5.2, but check this out, though. The EBUs are 22.5. So I looked that up, and they're European British units. So, but yeah, banana bread. So I told Clarissa, she bought it, and we're finishing up dinner, and I said, oh, yeah, and we have banana bread tonight. So what does she say? We do? No, the beer. Okay. So did you get a taste of it?
Not yet.
All right, let's see. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. It's saying, you know, like when you eat those banana candies, how they're so fake and artificial, like those yellow bananas. That's how this thing smells. Yeah. So we'll see. Hey, you know what, though? It is what it is. Clarissa's telling me she apologized. Apologize for what? I mean, it's like
nothing to apologize for.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's take a sip here. Wow, it's
cheers.
Clean looking. It's almost like a tinge of pinkish.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, it's like fake banana.
How's the aftertaste? Because some banana, if you're doing like a beer like that, if it can leave a clean palate and not give you too much of an aftertaste, then that's like the true sign of something.
So those yellow banana candies, those like really fake banana candies, is exactly what it smells like and what it tastes like, and that's the aftertaste.
Too bad.
Yeah, what I was thinking it was going to be, like if you drink some Belgians, you get that banana-y kind of flavor. I was expecting more of that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, this is meh.
Too much.
This is okay.
Well, I'm glad that this Flying Dog Brewery did Maryland proud. It is a great IPA, Imperial IPA. It is 8.7 ABV. And it is tasty. It has, you know, your typical, I was like, this is kind of the run-of-the-mill Imperial IPAs. But then the aftertaste, the notes that it kind of gave you off of that, it was kind of very hoppy, and it carried through. So it has the full-bodied IPA, and then it carries itself well.
Yeah, nice. I'm happy to hear that for your side of the house. Yeah, I looked it up. I guess they're just like banana sweets or something, but you know what I'm talking about, though.
I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, those like candy banana yellow sweets or something. Ugh, that's what this tastes like. Yeah.
It's like some, I think Laffy Taffy has a banana flavor that's...
Kind of, it's like that, you know? It's like so fake.
So do you want to do your week? My week has just been driving.
Well, I'll have three things. One's really quick.
Okay.
Harvesting garden fresh tomatoes and habanero and jalapeno peppers like crazy. They're nothing beats garden fresh homegrown tomatoes. Story number two, and then I have a kind of a funny one. So I ride over to the liquor store the other day on the corner. It's like, you know, the local market to get some beer and stuff. And I ride up and this couple is like, "Oh, we see you everywhere," you know, because I'm with the boys on the Urban Aero shark bike. Yeah.
Right.
And so we're talking and everything. And the guy just subtly throws in there, you know, we're opening the Cold Coast Brewery on,
oh, nice,
you know, downtown. And I said, "Oh, wow." You know, I'm like, "No, you need to lead with that." So we started talking and he's telling me about it and stuff. And so we have this open invite to take a tour of the place, and they're going to be opening in roughly about 12 weeks. And depending on how all the COVID stuff goes, if they're not going to be able to, then they're going to go to distribution with cans, I guess. And so he's like, "Yeah, come down anytime and, you know, take a tour. We can hang out, drink some beers and stuff." So I'm going to let him know that, hey, you know, like we have this podcast and we drink beer.
Yeah.
And whenever your opening happens, if it's like a soft opening or a hard opening, whatever, however they're going to do it, we could go there and like have our live show, our live as it happened show and everything. We could do something like that.
That'd be awesome.
And I don't know, maybe he'll sponsor us some beers or something. Who the heck knows? But totally cool dude.
Do they have crowlers?
They're not even open yet.
Oh, okay. When you said they were going to open with cans, I didn't know if you knew that they had like crowlers or growlers or...
He said if they can't open the tasting room because of like COVID running wild, then they're going to go to distribution with like 12-ounce cans.
Okay.
Yeah, like 6-packs or 4-packs or something.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, "Yeah, we're already fans, you know?" And I showed him a picture on Instagram I took with the shark bike out front.
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, there's a picture." And he and his wife kind of laughed. I said, "No, but the bike is in the picture." And they looked again and they're like, "Oh, that's amazing," you know? So that was a lot of fun. And I look forward to, you know, building a relationship with them and just going for beers. And they only live a few like blocks away from us, which is kind of cool too.
That's awesome.
And the last thing about that, so the guy I would never have known, you know, and he said, "You probably don't recognize," because I follow him on Instagram. He said, "You probably don't recognize me from Instagram. I lost a lot of weight." I said, "Oh, okay." You know, he's like, "Yeah, I've gone keto or whatever."
Right.
I get home and I pull up Instagram because I just want to see him. Like, well, which guy is he?
Right.
Because there's four dudes, right? And there's only one guy with the long white goatee, and that this is the dude. Uh-huh. I mean, he must have lost like, I don't know, 50, 80 pounds.
Wow.
Maybe not 80. That's probably a lot. He probably lost at least 50 pounds. And I was looking, I'm like, holy cow, man, he was like a chunker and now he's like lean and like buff. I'm just like, damn, whatever he's been doing, keep it doing, you know? So that was cool to see. And like, and he even said too, he goes, yeah, you won't recognize me in the pictures.
Other than the beard, right?
Well, that's how I knew him, because all the other guys are dark haired and he's gray haired. And then the last thing really that happened was, so I got in this, well, I was going to do a century, 100-mile ride. And, you know, I got a late start in the day, and which is typical of me. So I wound up riding 93 miles. So I didn't do the full century. But where I was going, I needed water, you know, and I'm looking on the map and I plotted it out like weeks prior. And there's a school in this one spot where I knew I would need to refill on the way out and I need to refill on the way in. So I'm like, oh, you know, perfect. Yeah, water fountains and stuff. So they got water. So I come rolling in. Everything's locked up, but this little like gate. Mm-hmm. And I pop the gate and I come rolling in and there's a water spigot. And I'm like, okay, I run the water spigot just to make sure it's clear and everything. I run it for about a minute. And, you know, I do a little sip. I'm like, oh, wow, it tastes really good. So I fill up my bottles and I go to turn it off. And as I'm turning it off, you know, like it's one of those, like as you're turning it off, it's all like squeak, 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 you know. Yeah. And I get right to the point where it's about to fin it, to close the gate.
To shut. Yeah. Right.
Bam. The handle cracks off.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, damn. So I'm like, okay, it's not like flooding water, but it's like there's like this trickle coming out. And it's like I try to pinch the little like, I don't know, the little like nub hanging out. Can't get it closed. So now I'm pinching that with one hand and I'm pinching my fingers with the, so I'm, I have like two hands. I get it slightly more closed, but it's like still trickling out. I'm like, oh, man. Nobody's around, you know, it's like right. Sunday morning. I mean, the whole town, and it's in this town called Sisquak, right? Oh, I just gave away the school. That's okay. I'll get to that in a second. So it's in this little town, Sisquak. I mean, there's probably like 25 residents in the town. So like I say the town's closed, like it's literally like nobody's around. There's like 10 houses, maybe 15. Anyway, so I go to where I'm going to go. I come back. It's still trickling and I use a little trickle. It's more flushed out this time. And I used a little trickle. I fill up my bottles and everything. Still, nobody's around. I come home. I tell Clarissa what happened. She goes, oh, this is Sunday. She goes, oh, well, just why don't you just call tomorrow and tell them like the water's leaking? That's a brilliant idea. I didn't even think of that. I'm like, and in my mind, I'm like, it's going to be months before they find out, you know, because like school's closed and everything. So they opened at like 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. or whatever time. And, you know, I called like maybe 8:30 and I said, yeah, I want to report a water leak. And I told them, yeah, I was out riding and, you know, stopped for water and this thing was broken. And, you know, and she's like, oh, thanks for telling us. We'll get someone out there to fix it, you know. And but I was just
look
like
you, good Samaritan.
But oh, dude, but it's like you're turning and then the thing just cracks off in your hand and it's like immediately your heart just sinks. You're just like, ugh. Oh my God, well, now what do I do? Because it's still running. Anyway, so yeah, that was like the big three of the week. Well, probably the big two, I guess, meeting the guy Eric Oviatt. His name is Eric Oviatt from Cold Coast Brewing and the Garden Tomatoes, and then my water spigot story. So, and then you just drove all week pretty much.
We drove for, what was it? It was about four, it was 3 days, three solid days of driving.
About 3,500 miles?
Yeah, I think so. So we drove from LA to.
Wait, how many days?
Three days.
Oh, 3 days. Okay.
So we drove from LA to Colorado Springs. And that took close to 19 hours.
Oh, wow.
So it was the first day. We rolled in, was super late. Stayed with my brother-in-law, works at the Air Force up there. So we stayed there overnight, got an early, bright start next day. And we have a great friend in Kansas City. So we went over to Gabe and Tony's in Kansas City. And that was the short ride. Was that 9 hours, 10 hours, something like that? Just all across Kansas. Just basically just a straight shot
flat.
From Colorado Springs to flat. Kansas City. Just flat. Just completely flat.
Right.
So the next day, everybody's like, oh, you should stop. You shouldn't go from Kansas City to D.C. You know, that's too long of a haul.
Dude, that's a long, that's a haul.
Right? So I was like, oh, it says 16, 17 hours on the map. And they're like, everybody's like, it lies. It's going to be at least 20. So I'm like, all right. So if it's 20, it's 20, you know? So I start driving in the morning, and Anne doesn't like driving at night because of the glare and all that stuff. So I said, all right, so I'll just drive for a little bit in the morning. You drive in the afternoon, and you just drive until it gets dark or whatever, and then I'll take over driving. And then if we have to stop, we'll just stop, or we'll get a place if we want to get a place, or
yeah.
Or I'll just I'll power through. So when Anne took over driving, I was like, all right, I just throw a blanket over my face and just see if I can force myself to sleep. So I forced myself to sleep most of like the end of Missouri, across Illinois and Indiana, and then part of Ohio. And it started to get dark at the end of Ohio. And so I woke up and I had like 5-6 hours of sleep, I think.
Wow.
You know, like on and off. And then around 8:30, I was like, okay, we gas up. I'll take over driving. And I just pounded. I was just like driving, you know, all the way through West Virginia, corner of Pennsylvania. And then I was like, hey, we're in Maryland, you know. I was like, because you think you're in Maryland, you're like home clear.
Another
you know,
4 hours clear. To go.
But it, exactly. Right. It was so much more. And then right as like the sun like barely started to come up, it was like the 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm still driving. And she's like, we should just stop for a couple hours, just stop somewhere. And so we needed to get gas, and we got some gas, and I was like, oh, I think I'm done. I think from like 8:30 or 8:30 to 5 in the morning, I was like, I've hit my max. I gotta stop.
Yeah, you don't want to like do something stupid and get everyone killed.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And I told Anne, I've never killed the family driving before, so you know,
why start now?
let's keep that record. No, she was really worried. She had a hard time sleeping while I was driving because it was the middle of the night, but she tried.
And you're going 90.
Well, no, there's so much construction from between Ohio and West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
There was tons of construction. It was very, very confusing.
And that slows you down too, you know?
And it's like, yeah, they slow you down to like 40 miles an hour and there's nobody on the road because it's 3 o'clock in the morning, but you still have to go, you know, go slow, you know?
Yeah, right. You can't make time with that.
she said she got a little bit of sleep. So she took over driving at 5 o'clock. And I crashed out, and we pulled into the driveway at like 6:30. So she was a trooper, and she finished it up. And then I spent Tuesday on and off sleeping and trying to check my email because I was like technically working, but you know, had to take some cat naps.
I can't sleep in the car. I mean, that kind of driving is just brutal. You know, like we did it a couple of years ago, went all the way around the country and all that stuff, probably put on about 7,000 miles that summer. And I know exactly what you're talking about, man. With that said, and now that you're there safely and pretty yes. much your stories revolve around just driving, how about we talk the Comey rule?
All right, cool. What do you think?
Well, did you read the book? Because it's adapted from Comey's book, A Higher Loyalty, Truth, Lies, and Leadership.
I did not read the book. I did hear a lot about all of the stories around this, you know, the interactions that Comey had with Trump. So it is interesting to see. And like the portrayal of the characters is amazing. I think Jeff Daniels is great in this type of role, you know, the intelligent, thoughtful, political wonk kind of thing. Like, and you know, I think even though he's an FBI guy, I really think Comey felt like he was a political mover. So I think there is something to that. So, you know, all of the copious notes that he took about the interactions that he had with Trump before, during, after, you know, the dinner. The dinner is a great scene. I love the way they dramatize that. So it's kind of fresh history. I think it's interesting they made it a miniseries, you know. It's a strange, I kind of wanted it to be like a movie. I don't know if...
Well, there's a lot of information.
Maybe, okay. Did you read the book?
Yeah, Frank has the book. I read it. I gave it back to him, so if you're interested, he probably still has it. I feel bad for Brendan Gleeson, though, man.
He does a great job. He does a great job.
Oh, no, I'm saying I feel bad for him to look and sound like Trump the way he does. I mean, what a curse. No, actually, it's probably not a curse because it got him this role, right?
Yeah, no, he looks great, and I think it's a hard
thing. He looks like the Orange Man.
It's a hard thing to pull off, you know what I mean? So
maybe, I don't know. He probably needs to go to Saturday Night Live or something for a few bits. Yeah, and you mentioned, or you said how Comey was playing the political sides and things like that. When you read his book, though, he made painstaking efforts to not be political. He didn't take sides. I'm not saying that's how it portrays here on with this trailer and with the show, but in his book, he was adamant that he's not going to take sides, and that was the primary reason he got relieved of his duty.
Yeah, I kind of agree to a point, but it kind of like he doth protest too much, you know what I mean? It felt like a lot of times, especially early on, it felt like he was making moves in the other direction, you know, and it was just, I think the way that the media gets portrayed as having a natural liberal bias, you know, I think he kind of fell into the natural conservative bias of the FBI, you know, and he kind of tried to play it fair down the middle.
Right.
But he was going down the middle too, you know, rather than actually doing what's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
So, I mean, by forcing him to be super apolitical, he actually fell into the trap of becoming a political pawn.
Right. Okay, I got you there. Yeah. And I would agree with that. Because the way he portrayed himself was, like you said, apolitical, but that forced him into the being more of a pawn of Trump than it did of his own volition.
Right, right.
And this comes out on Showtime September 27th. What's your opinion? I mean, like, okay, Showtime. I definitely would like to watch this. I read the book. I want to see how it plays out, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised you read that book. I remember you guys, you and Frank talking about the book, and I think now I remember that you guys did read the book, so yeah.
Yeah, well, he brought it over, so I'll read it, you know. It was a good read, I thought, and it went pretty well. I think the main thing is, you know, saying that it comes out on Showtime, and this is one of the problems I have with streaming and all that stuff. One of the main problems with streaming, and we've kind of talked about these things in the past. So this is on Showtime. We've covered lots of HBO, and obviously you have the non-network things like Netflix and Hulu and Disney and so on.
Right.
Again, is it worth subscribing to HBO, or do you just subscribe for the 7-day free trial, binge it, cancel? Like, how do you play this? Because there's too many damn streaming services.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have...
I can't afford them all.
You can afford them all. No, I'm just kidding. I think if you have Showtime, this is something that you'd just watch because it's on.
Because it's there.
Because it's there and it's September. That September, October, November timeframe is going to be so fraught with political intrigue, you know, and the horse race in real life, you know?
Oh, man, that's true. I didn't even think about the release date. Oh, my God. It's like right before the election. I bet it ends on Super Tuesday or whatever, or election. Could you imagine? That's the final episode. No, the final episode is the Monday night right before the election.
The bombshell. Yeah, it drops the bombshell.
Oh, that would be like brilliant if they did that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if it's a miniseries, I think it is probably timed out like that. It, you know, everyone talks about an election year, there's an October surprise, and I don't think there can be an October surprise in this because obviously it's from a book.
What's an October surprise?
October surprise is like the Access Hollywood tape was an October surprise. Comey releasing or putting Hillary Clinton on trial for the emails or questioning her, you know, that happened in October. So a lot of things that happen October of an election year to sway voters.
Oh, wow. I never heard that phrase, October surprise.
Yeah.
Huh.
So there's October surprises all over the place. But this is not it. But, you know, it's an interesting thing to add to the noise, the din of the time of October.
And interesting, too. I mean, it comes out September 27th, so right at the end. So it plays out. I mean, I don't know. I looked on IMDb. It shows two episodes. It's got to be more than that.
That's probably, yeah, probably it's either 6 or 10.
Probably 6, which tells you it's going to finish the weekend before the election.
Yeah. No, that'd be awesome.
that's timing right there. That's timing. Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to watch it. I feel like it's a shame it's just on Showtime, because I think HBO would be a bigger draw if you were to look at, you know, just the shows that they have and their popularity and their, you know, I mean, and their pedigree,
right,
with things like, you know, all the other shows they have, but Game of Thrones specifically, let's say, is a big one. I don't see a lot of people, I mean, in spite of where this lands with in relation to the election and stuff, I don't see a lot of people, you know, hitting this one up. What do you think?
Adding Showtime to their streaming services.
Yeah. Maybe the week before everyone just binges with the free trial.
Well, that would be interesting to me to kind of do it, you know, to have a little, it's hard because if you're running something like Netflix, you could have like a lot of faith in your programming and just kind of release like an episode or two on YouTube. That might be interesting.
Huh? Yeah.
You know, if you just released full episodes on YouTube as like a marketing strategy, that would be cool, I think. But you really have to believe in your product and have other stuff for people to latch onto when they arrive or when they subscribe. So I don't know if Showtime has the full palette of shows that you could demand somebody to keep the subscription up. I was also concerned, like, isn't HBO Max supposed to have other services in it, or is HBO Max cutting out? Because I always thought Showtime and Cinemax were like little siblings to HBO.
I always feel the same about that. Yeah.
Like when you had packages, when you bought cable packages, they'd always bundle, like you get Showtime and HBO or Cinemax and HBO, and you know,
right,
you
right,
like choose like that. So if HBO Max is supposed to be more than just HBO, then they should bundle this with that and be like, you know, brand it Showtime, but say available on HBO Max, or, you know, I don't know what the whole Viacom or CBS Viacom deal is, but it feels like it's all under that super media group. So they should be a little more synergistic in their branding and streaming.
Yeah, I don't know. Since we can't answer those questions, maybe we can answer the big question. Who wants to be a kajillionaire? Kajillionaire.
I was not very interested in this trailer, but then I watched it and it really struck me as an American attempt at Parasite. You're familiar with Parasite, right? From last year, the big Oscar award-winning Korean movie.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the Korean zombie movie, whatever.
No, 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 no. No, that was...
Oh, wait, what am I missing?
You're saying Peninsula.
Oh, Peninsula. Ah, there's both. There's peas.
So Parasite is a dark comedy, dark Korean Korean movie that is about a family of con artists.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, I know which one you're talking about.
And the director won, you know, all the Academy Awards for it.
Yeah,
Academy Awards for it. And I think this really struck me as like an American version, an American take on Parasite, you know, like a dysfunctional family that's just con artists. And instead of a boy and a girl, this one just has one girl, you know, and she's kind of an older girl. But this is the family of three, and they're just like ripping each other off and you know, comedy ensues. But it's really funny when you think about it. Do you remember the movie Big Daddy?
Yes.
Adam Sandler movie?
Yeah.
Did you know that was a ripoff of a Czech movie?
I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, even like the U.S. version of The Office is a remake of the British Office. I mean, people do that all the time. So it doesn't surprise me when I hear that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, for me, The Office is one thing because at least they kept the name and they kind of had it within, it is within the franchise. It isn't just straight copying or thievery, you know. But I think when I saw Big Daddy, I liked the movie a lot. But then I went to film school in Prague and we saw the movie Kolya, which is the exact same movie, except it's in Czech. And, you know, it's a Czech movie about a bachelor who finds a boy and it turns out he's the dad and he has to be the dad.
Oh, that's funny.
And it was done before Big Daddy. And
which was better? Which was better?
I thought the Czech movie had more heart. But the Big Daddy was funnier.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're in Prague and you're in film school and you're just like, oh, America, ripped this movie off. And I was so in love with the idea of Kolya. And it was I think it had better execution. It just wasn't as funny. You know, it was much more heartwarming. It had more range, you know, like he was more of a ladies' man than Adam Sandler was.
His character went deeper.
Yeah, exactly. He had a bigger arc. His character went deeper. Everything was felt more. So I thought that was interesting. And to me, this feels like a similar thing's going on here, except you can't really do it to Parasite because Parasite's been out there and it's known the world around, you know, that I think, well, we'll see if it can hold on its own. I love these actors. Deborah Winger's great. And then Evan Rachel Wood, you know, she's very different than her Westworld character. So,
yeah, and I got the sense, like it says a new comedy from Miranda July, and I got the sense it should say a new dark comedy from Miranda July, too.
I think so, too. Yeah, exactly.
It looks like there's some funny scenes, but the trailer also leads to some very emotionally dark scenes. And with that, I mean, although the walking limbo when they're sneaking past the wall, that was actually pretty hilarious. I have to say, I actually audibly laughed at that one. I mean, I get the sense that the girl has this desire to be loved by her parents from a very young age. And one of the reasons she goes along with all the schemes and everything that they go to is she's just doing it to try and gain this admiration and love from her parents. And in the trailer, she comes out and she's saying, like, you know, I want to be loved. You never tell me the good things only when we're doing a heist or something.
Right.
I want to hear it outside of that, just that you care about me, you know? And I think, ethics be damned, she wants to be accepted by her parents, which is why she's been doing what she's been doing since, you know, a child.
Right.
And you see that emotion, that emotional turmoil of doing what my parents are asking me to do, to steal and to be a fraud and to, I don't know, what do you call it? Like,
forger.
Be a forger of checks, right, and things. And she's going along for that acceptance. And the whole underlying premise of the movie is parental acceptance of who I am. The only way to get that is to be a criminal in the making with them, you know?
And yeah.
So I think that's where the dark side comes. And what do you think the significance of the pink foamy soap is?
I don't know.
That plays out throughout the whole trailer.
It's in the poster, it's in the trailer.
It's everything.
It gets into everything, that pink soap. I don't know what it what
there's got to be a metaphor.
It has to be a metaphor. The one thing that I will say, like, you know, it doesn't feel like a straight copy, but conversely to Kolya and Big Daddy, like, part of the reason I didn't like Parasite was I couldn't, throughout the whole movie, I couldn't.
Subtitles.
Well, subtitles, yes. Okay. Subtitles was one thing. But I try, you know, it's an Oscar award at that time. It was an Oscar nominated movie. It had a lot of buzz around it. So I tried to watch it. I watched it. But I could not empathize with the characters. And even if you have an evil character like Walter White, you empathize with him because he's, you know, been beaten down and cancer. And,
for sure.
You know, he is a likable, developing villain, and his arc kind of goes counter to the typical arc. It goes back against itself, you know. But there is redeemable qualities to both Pinkman and Walter White. But in Parasite, I couldn't ever find a foothold to any of the characters to have any redeeming qualities to them. And in this movie, with the girlfriend and Evan Rachel Wood, like you said, striving for parental acceptance or just acceptance by anyone, I think their friendship between the two of them is the thing that I want to watch this for. It feels like this is going to be the true arc of the story, is like, she doesn't know any different because she was raised in this. But how bad her life is only exposed when you bring in an outsider to point out to you, like, this is not normal. Like, I know you know no different, but what you have going on here is wrong, and it's not normal, and it's not good for you. You know, so I love that idea that she's, you know, innocent enough and open enough to maybe listen to her friend or see where it goes from there.
Yeah. I mean, overall, it looks phenomenal. One thing I have a question of, so it's coming out this fall. We don't have a date, it looks like. And then where is it playing or where is it streaming? I mean, probably streaming, but where though? Because if it's Cinemax or if it's, you know, Showtime or something, like, I probably won't see it. But if it's a Netflix or if it's like, you know, pay $5-$8 to rent or something, it might be worth it. Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any indication? Did you find out? I looked, I couldn't find.
I didn't find out. I thought they were trying to do a theatrical release, but maybe they're trying to mix it up with theatrical and streaming. I don't know. You could do a theatrical release for a movie like this and not lose too much. I think you weren't expecting a lot, and you're going to mix it in. So if you did streaming and theatrical, that might be something. Like if you push it off till the end of the, you know, the winter when it's time, you know, maybe you got both.
And maybe that's why they say this fall, to be ambiguous so they don't commit to anything.
Right. Yeah.
Theaters aren't still open, are they?
No, not now, but I think everybody's, you know, hoping.
They're all champing at the bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Everybody's like, if the schools can open, why can't the theaters open? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So here's the thing, though. Okay, so she says to her parents, we've been splitting things three ways my entire life.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so whatever. You do a bank robbery, let's say. Let's say it's $1 million. Really? You're going to split with like a five-year-old? You know, I mean, I don't know how that works, unless they put it in like an account for her or something. Like, well, baby, here's your earned income. Like, let's start a 401k.
I doubt she has a Coogan from her thievery.
A Coogan. You know?
Could you imagine if we split it three ways, except for the 15% that we put in your Coogan, honey? because we're honest brokers amongst the three of us.
And, you know, we were able to put it in tax deferred. Right, it tax advantaged us.
Right.
All right, man. So, what are you watching? Anything? I mean, you probably are watching something. I know you had a long drive, but it only was 3 days. It wasn't like since the last time we spoke.
No, I know. So yeah, so it was.
Oh, gotta check the app. Man. Gotta check the app.
Check the app. I gotta check the app. But before the app, I'll talk about the two TV shows that I watched not TV shows, but miniseries and one TV show.
Okay.
So, Last Dance.
Oh,
you've watched, did you watch the whole thing?
Whole thing.
Amazing.
I'll tell you what, it was so good. Clarissa watched it and Clarissa was gripped by the thing. Although there were a few times we watched too many in a row and she did fall asleep on the last one. But it was phenomenal. I mean, you don't have to be a Bulls fan to be like just taken by it.
Right. So part of the problem of watching this was I started watching this when we were in LA.
Okay.
And then when we started to drive, I was like, all right, I'm not going to watch it while I drive. But when it was my turn to go to sleep, I was like, oh, maybe I'll catch an episode of Last Dance before I go to sleep, you know?
Oh, like cruising in the car.
Just in the car, just in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm, you know, over there for my 6 hour stretch of not driving.
Yeah.
I said, I gotta relax into it before I go to sleep. So I'll watch an episode of Last Dance.
And what were the kids doing this whole time? They were just in the back like,
oh my God. We just turned off our 2 hour limit to them. We're just like, go bug eyed. We'll ask you to read every couple hours and look out the window, you know, like take away the phones, you know, from here and there. But
I know Audrey's a voracious reader.
Yeah.
So is she still, or is she just like all over YouTube and like books be damned?
She's a little burnt out on the reading, yes.
Okay, because she used to read like...
She used to read 5 million words a year, yeah.
Or whatever. I mean, like books, like unbelievable. Like she read half the library.
She did. She was a voracious reader and she kind of burned out a little bit on it. So, you know, it's the end of middle school. We thought we'd give her a little bit of a break and then maybe by high school she'll be back into reading. I think she still has the skill to do it. Like I can't focus.
Oh yeah. You're not going to take away reading. I mean, or you're not going to lose reading, I should say.
Right. Well, but I never had it and I'm never going to get it. I can't sit down to read. I can't read a book.
Oh, okay.
Save my life.
You know, what's funny, when I was younger, like reading was like, you may as well just stick ice picks in my eyes. And as I get older, like I can't read enough. I love reading. I read all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny how things like shift like that.
Yeah. So I was watching some of the middle episodes on the drive, and I loved the storytelling devices of the timeline and the comparison between all the years leading up to the final year and The Last Dance and the current season of The Last Dance, you know? And when you don't watch it, when you're just listening to it, it is a bit disjointed. So I would try to just like read the lower thirds for Anne because she was driving.
Oh, she was into it too?
She was kind of into it, but she was the one who actually said, why don't you watch one of your episodes of Last Dance or something? So I was like, but you can't watch it while you're driving. She goes, that's all right, I'll listen to it. But when they do the rewind thing and they go back 4 years and they talk about the parallel between what happened 4 years ago and what's happening in this final season.
Right.
The 99 season or 98 season or whatever.
98, yeah.
When they go back and forth, if I didn't say like, we're going back in time to April, you know, 20.
Well, yeah, because she can't see the timeline moving, right.
Right. And she goes, why do they have to tell her that? Why can't they just tell you the linear story? I'm like, no, this is perfect because they talk about this one thing over here and then it happens over here and there's like a parallel. So I thought the storytelling, like you said, you don't have to be a Bulls fan to be into this. But as a child of the 90s and, you know, just like loving everything about the 90s, the soundtrack was amazing. You know what I mean?
The whole thing was great.
They picked topical songs from all the eras and they had, you know, Seinfeld talking about, you know, how he's like the quintessential sitcom of the 90s.
Oh, it was amazing.
The team of the 90s and just the will and the ability to put winning above everything else for Michael Jordan is just, you know, I think, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, we said, you asked what about my superhero, what my superpower would be.
And willpower.
Said, willpower. And this is the man who typifies, he is the personification of willpower, right?
I mean, well, in talking with Frank last week, he was saying how, because, you know, he works at Warner Brothers, and when they did Space Jam, he would be in the gym watching all these guys playing and everything.
That's right.
Oh,
that's
it's amazing, right. You know, and I mean, and just getting into it with, like, you know, all the NBA guys and, you know, being a Bulls fan himself and everything. I mean, and me growing up in Chicago too. I mean, watching it, I relive the 90s. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And I remember the 72-10 season. For I don't know why, but for whatever reason, like every year I would miss games and, you know, because I was a huge Michael Jordan Bulls fan and everything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember that year I said, I'm going to make it a point to watch every single game this year. And that was the only season I ever did that. And they just so happened to go 72-10. And it was like, it was unbelievable, you know?
They did it for you, Jimmy.
Maybe, because I told them I'm going to watch every single game.
But I mean, that was Michael's thing, right? Like he said, people spent their hard-earned money to come watch me play. And he, you know, he used every angle that he could find.
To be a winner.
To motivate himself to win above all else, you know, like punching Kerr in the face. I love it. Everything about it was amazing.
And even when he goes at the restaurant and George Carl like slights him, doesn't say hi. And Jordan's like, oh, really? That's how it's going to be?
Okay.
And I love the other story. I forget who it was. He fabricated some story in his head. Yeah. And then later somebody asked him, like they called
him.
He's
like, no.
And they're like, so really that happened? He goes, oh no, I made that whole thing up.
I just needed an edge.
And it's like, wait, you did what? He's like, yeah, I needed some, I had nothing. I made it up so I could beat the guy. It's like, what insanity does that, you know?
A winner. That's
a winner, man. A winner. I mean, like, you know what's funny though? And it got me thinking about the Lance Armstrong one. Mm-hmm. Drugs aside, I don't care about the drugs at this point of what I'm talking about. But the thing is, I mean, face it, Armstrong was a jerk and a dick, mm-hmm. right? Whatever it took to win. I mean, he would throw anybody under the bus. He would yell at his teammates, he, you know, all whatever it is. And then when you look at Jordan, I mean, ultimately the guy was pretty much of a jerk, you know, and he'd make up stories about people just to beat him, or he'd punch Kerr in the face, like he said. And I mean, he did call and apologize later. I mean, I give him credit for that, but you know, the guy was like ruthless with his desire to win and everything. And you know, it got me thinking, like, when you look at how Armstrong treated people or how Jordan treated people, you know, and I mean, those are my two examples, or maybe there's not as many, but I'm saying, to be a champion of that caliber, does it require one to be this like ultimate jerk to win at all costs, regardless of how other people are destroyed in your wake?
And it's so funny, you know, when you talk about brilliant jerks, when they talk about that in business, a lot of times they say, oh, there's no room for brilliant jerks in business because, you know, you have to do it. But in sports, I think there's a little bit more leeway in sports because Jordan said, this is a team sport and I'm bringing everybody up with me. You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
If he's hard on his teammates, he's hard on his teammates so the team will win.
And he's harder on himself.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, yes, he's hard on himself.
I would say harder on himself.
Yeah. But it was so great. Like, throughout the years, like, he gave the last shot to Paxson, you know?
Oh, man.
In year five, in the fifth title, he gave the last shot to Kerr, you know?
Right.
And then on the last shot of the last game, when it was time, nobody even cared. Nobody was even like, there's no question on either team who is going to take that shot. And Jordan knew he was going to take that shot, and Jordan hung it up there, and he did the whole thing, and he pictured it in his mind, and it just happened the way that he pictured it. It's a textbook sportsman.
He's you know, there's a lot of great basketball players, and I mean, yeah, he's got to be the greatest.
All my millennial friends, you know, there's a couple of millennial friends who are like LeBron, 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 and I'm like, no, for the game, like in the era, there's no one like Mike. You know what I mean?
Oh, and LeBron's phenomenal, obviously, but no, but yeah, Jordan. I mean, he's. And then when they had that 92 Dream Team, I remember watching that, and I don't remember who it was that they interviewed, but it was somebody on like another team somewhere in the world that they played. And they said, you know, that year, maybe it was Tony Kukoc or something, you know, and they were saying like that year we were just like fans.
Yeah.
They ran us all over the floor and we were just in awe of them. We couldn't even play them because we were like cheering them on, you know? And it's like, yeah, like how do you go into a game against them when you're a fan of them and you're like rooting for them, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. So what else, let's say, okay, two series and a TV show or something you said.
So that was the one thing that I finished up watching. And then, because of, we were inspired by your episode, the 117.5.
Oh, okay.
So when we heard that episode, I was like, "Ann, you really sound like the mother from Schitt's Creek." And
that's hilarious.
Your enunciation is so perfect and so
Boule, you know, baking down, bread
down to the syllable. And you know, a couple of her friends have told her to watch Schitt's Creek, and we tried to watch Schitt's Creek like a year ago.
I've heard of it, yeah.
And it's on Netflix, so it's low bar to get onto it. So we tried to watch that again, and we binged a couple episodes. And it's like, I think Anne's like forcing herself to watch it. But she's getting into it, you know. And again, the redeemable are these redeeming characters? Not yet, but I think there's something about their lack of humanity and exposing it in this small town way. So we're in the midst of the first season of that. What else do we watch? We watched a little Troll World Tour. We saw that.
Oh, okay.
Finally saw that. That was good. Oh, and then Animal Crackers.
Animal Crackers. Never heard of it.
Trolls World Tour and Animal Crackers. Animal Crackers is a Netflix film that just came out last week.
Okay.
And it's got John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. It's animated, but
that's his wife, right?
Couple. Yeah.
Yeah.
And has them as a married couple from the circus, and it's magical hijinks. Danny DeVito's a clown in it. So you and the kids should watch
that. Oh, that sounds cute.
It's a fun one.
I like Danny DeVito. Yeah.
Lots of voice characters. Brock played, who's Superman in Seinfeld, speaking of Seinfeld?
Superman.
The Elaine's boyfriend that has the...
Oh, Putty.
What's his name? Putty, yeah.
Putty.
So Putty is, he's just the voice, he's a voice actor for sure.
Yeah.
And he plays the villain in this movie.
Well, he's in Space Force.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's in Space Force too. Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of Space Force, remember we were talking a while back, like, you know, what did she do to get in prison?
Yeah.
Murder.
What did she do? Who?
The wife. The blonde wife.
Who'd she murder?
Well, they never said.
How do we know this now? Oh.
Because she said, you know, even if I did it, you know, like, I didn't murder that person, even if I did it or something. She said something along those lines. It was like a throwaway line almost.
Oh, okay.
When they had their conjugal visit.
Oh, their visitation, right?
Yeah, and she was talking about, I'm going to be, because she wanted to, like, have a lesbian relationship or something. And she's like, I'm going to be in here 40 years and, you know, whatever. It was in that conversation.
So that was it for me. You know, a lot of sleeping, a lot of driving, a lot of other stuff. So what have you been watching?
You watched more. I'm surprised you watched so much. We watched Fear City, New York versus the Mafia. And, you know, that was one of those ones, you know, well, you listened to the Netflix Land of the Giants.
Yes.
So when they were talking about how they feed people different things and stuff, so that was fed right to me. And I just bit like a bass with a fisherman trolling, and he caught me hook, line, and sinker. And I went down for the, you know, and I got caught.
Yeah, he bought that spinner lure for you.
That's right, like, exactly. So Netflix Jimmy. Got me. it was easy. Three episodes in and out. It was like 2 45-minute episodes, 1 1-hour episode. So it was like really quick. Mm-hmm. I felt they needed at least 1 to 2 more episodes, because where it ended was right about the point where Gotti took over the Gambino family. And it ended right there, and it kind of gave all the background of the people they interviewed and stuff, but maybe they just couldn't get anybody to talk about Gotti.
Not yet.
Not yet, right. Yeah, so maybe, and he's dead. He died anyway. He died in prison. But maybe they couldn't get anybody to talk about Gotti as far as interviews and stuff, so they just called it where they called it. But yeah, it was really good. Clarissa, we watched it together again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the title, rather than New York versus the Mafia, I think it should have been the FBI versus the Mafia, because really it took place in New York, but New York, as far as the city or the state, had really nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. Because it was the FBI, and Giuliani was a federal attorney. So before he became a mayor or anything like that,
he was a prosecutor, right?
Yeah, he was a federal prosecutor. So again, the FBI made the case, and he prosecuted on behalf of the feds. So again, it really had nothing to do with New York as far as like being versus the Mafia. So I think the title was a little misleading. Otherwise, 3 episodes, super easy to watch because it was so short. I expected at least like 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. We watched the 1950s movie Treasure Island on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Good enough to where now we're reading the book. And, you know, I'm reading it to the boys. I'm doing like voice characters and stuff with the boys. And so it was... They were gripped the whole time. I mean, they were into it.
So it held the boys. It held up over the years, and now
100%.
It held their attention.
100%.
That's amazing.
So, okay, it's over. All right, wrap it up. Let's get ready for bed. Go brush your teeth, blah, blah, blah. Put them all down. That's it. Next morning, I'm like, so boys, what'd you think of the movie? Timmy said too much blood. So what, like, one guy gets, there was a few, like, there was a, like, a couple slashings with swords. Another guy got shot and stuff. So it wasn't bad, but he's like, way too much blood. Mikey, what'd you think? Too much talking. I said, what do you mean too much talking?
More action.
He wanted more action, too much dialogue. In the meantime, their eyes were like saucers. They were on it, man. I mean, they were into it as if they were living it, you know. They were young Jim.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, they really enjoyed that. And then we watched a couple episodes of, and I'm going to get this wrong. It's so hard to, Middle Stitch and Short? No, Middle Ditch.
Middle Vitch.
Middle Ditch.
Middle Ditch and...
And Schwartz.
Schwartz, yeah.
Yeah, Middle Ditch and Schwartz. That's, man, it was like... And I knew I was going to mess it up, too, because I couldn't figure it out.
Which episodes did you see?
The first two.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a cool premise.
Hilarious.
It's an amazing premise.
Hilarious. I mean, so they ask someone in the audience, they're talking about stuff. It's typical improv.
Yeah.
I've gone to improv, and they do that exact thing, like, throw out a name, throw out this. Okay, tell me about, you know, whatever, and then they put a story together. But what I like is they dig into what people are doing and their story. They get a little bit deeper, and then they play it out the way they play it out. Audible laughing, like straight up. It was pretty funny, you know.
And it's really masterful when they do it right, you know. And you heard them give the little interview
right.
of the person in the audience, you know, and they've dug very deep into the story.
You know, yeah. That's what I mean. They go deep.
And then like there's a few throwaways in that story. And at the end, if they can pull out a culmination where they build up to it, where both of them are on the same page and they know that they're building up to this one little fact that they had.
Minor fact.
It's just this minor little thing, but it's the pinnacle of the story arc.
That was the funniest. I think that's what I laughed at. Best. When they pulled, I don't remember exactly what it was, but when they pulled that out, I was like, oh my God, they caught that. That is so awesome, you know? And then what I like too is how they would change themselves to be the same character. But what,
right, the standing on the chair
or whatever. And then when like the other guy goes to play in the audience and then the one dude takes over the character. I mean, that was pretty good too, because I didn't see that coming, that right. one would quit the character, the other would pick up where they left off with that character.
With the same character,
and they did it so seamless that it's like I know exactly which character they all are. Like it didn't lose me, you know what I mean? And
right.
And yeah, it was their improv is on point. I mean, it was very good.
Yeah.
It was very good. And but yeah, only the first two episodes, so we didn't watch anything after that. I mean, we watched the two in a row and it was getting late and stuff. So
yeah.
And I could tell we were kind of done with it at the end because things are landing and the audience is like crying, and then me and Clarissa are like, you know, our eyes are drooping, and I'm just like, yeah, we got to go to bed. We're losing it, and this is supposed to be funny, you know.
And I'm sure it is funny, and I'm sure it's just us.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it was brilliant though.
Yeah. Speaking of Netflix, Ann and I also watched Old Guard.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what did you think? Let's spend a few minutes, because I told you said after you watched it, we'd get into a few things.
Yeah. So I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot more than I thought. I thought it was a good premise, a good story. I like the drive. I like the internal motivation for each of the characters.
Okay.
You know, I loved the idea of the couple of immortals that are, you know, together for eternity, and they have a different sense of being immortal than Booker, who, you know, has been alone for a long time, and what's her name? Andy, who's also been along for a long time. So
right.
Alone for a long time. So it's very interesting. And then Niall, like as the newbie, as the noob in the whole thing, when she has to, this is her origin story. This is her coming of age. This is her coming out story. And it's just it was a good arc for everybody involved and a good overall story.
I like how they wove in because of course you have the question, well, how are they immortal? What's the mechanism right. that makes them immortal? And what I enjoyed about it was, and that's what I wanted to wait for to see what your thoughts were, because this is really where the spoiler lies. The underlying premise of the movie is, let's capture them, get their genetic code, and the genetic code will tell us how they're immortal. So we know it's something genetic, but we also don't know what the mechanism is, because if we knew what the mechanism was, you know, that's in the genetic code of what the doctor or the researcher was trying to solve.
Right.
But the way they kind of answered that, well, it's something genetic. We need to figure that out. And that's why we're going to go capture him and all this.
Yeah. And it was kind of like the startup mentality of like, well, we need all of them so none of my competitors can have them.
Right.
I mean, I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, there's not, I don't know. I didn't think there's that many people in biotech trying to chase this holy grail. But yeah. So, and then the cliffhanger, man, like, we what did we do? We were watching the end of it, and right as it goes to black, you feel like the movie's over, and Anne and I looked at each other, and Anne said to me, she goes, do you think there's a button? You know, do you think there's a sequence after the credits? And then it just is 6 months later, and I was like, I guess we don't have to wait. We don't have to wait for the credits. It's right here, you know?
Yeah.
And then to have, like, it's Booker, right? This is the character's name, I think. To have Booker run into the other girl, I was like, damn, if they don't have another movie, like, if they didn't shoot the other movie right now, like, I'm gonna be very disappointed. You don't drop this woman on me, you know, who supposedly died 1,000 times at the bottom of the ocean, you know?
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, and the other thing I like too is, like, they can't really die, but they feel the pain, they feel the gunshots, right. They feel the stabbings, you know, like they everything happens to them but death, essentially. They're not superheroes in the sense, like, they're bulletproof.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very Wolverine-esque where they feel it, but they kind of can push the bullets out or spit the bullets out after the fact, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
But it's neat because I think they do die. And something about the way that they die, you know, is funny when she's like, oh, it sucks how long it takes the first couple of times, you know, for you to come back, you know.
Yeah.
We see Niall throughout it, like, become better at dying and coming back. She regenerates faster throughout the whole movie, you know.
Right, right.
So I can't wait for the second movie. I think I'm more interested in the second story. To hear more of the backstory of the two girls palling around together for centuries, you know?
I think a second story, it's kind of like whenever you watch the Marvel movies and so on, and the Marvel movies have their origin story for, like, Ant-Man or whatever. It's like, okay, right. It's how he gets the suit and how he gets small, and that's an important thing to know. But then every movie after that are more developed, involve deeper stories than just here's how I became Ant-Man.
Right. And I think they did a little bit of the backstory, but I'm interested to hear even more of the backstory of the two immortal women in, you know, in olden times, like, kicking ass.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's cool that you guys saw that.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, I know you're on the East Coast. You're 3 hours ahead of me, and it's like probably what, like 2 o'clock in the morning or something? Or no, I don't know.
No.
So, all right. Yeah. And then it's cool that, you know, we were able to get together, even though you're, you know, across the country, and it's, you know, the magic of the internet always never ceases to amaze. And all right. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not sure we're going to probably have a week by week.
Yeah.
If we need to put out a replay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll talk if we could talk. And, you know, you have safe travels to Maine, and you have safe travels wherever you're going to wind up driving around, and especially that long drive back. I mean, don't try and push it too hard, because it's better to get home safe than dead.
Yeah, and I think we had a goal coming across this way, and, you know, and we all tested COVID negative, so we're good to go, you know. And I think that was a big part of coming speedily across and not doing hotel rooms and things like that. And, you know, we're not going to let our guard down coming back across, you know.
Well, we're going to do the cannonball run.
Oh, man, I told somebody about the gas tanks and the rental Mustang, and they were blown away by it, you know.
That's on Wikipedia. There you go. That's all. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
All right, man. Hey, you have a good night. Tell the family I said hi. Stay safe and enjoy your travels. We'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.